Hi, this is Mark Lou Carrier, welcoming you to another episode of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies. Now, this episode is really a continuation of the last one, where we saw Otto Wacker sitting in a Berlin courtroom in the 1930s, surrounded by his allegedly fake Van Goghs. But were they fake or were they real? We'll find out. And we did mention that one of the paintings behind him in the courtroom had an impact on a Canadian family more than 70 years later, and that's what we're going to look at right now. From the 1930s, we take a great leap into the future, from the austere dark wood-paneled pre-war courtroom in Berlin to modern-day Canada. In a tidy Winnipeg home, the bright winter sun catches the waves of green impasto, the thickly applied pigment that makes brush marks visible on what Monica de Jong and her brother Michael think is a genuine Van Gogh. They inherited the painting from their father, a longtime second-generation gallery owner in Amsterdam. Monica has spent 5 years trying to find clues that might help authenticate the work. She's pored over countless Van Gogh works in the albums, catalogs, and scholarly tomes lining the walls of her den. She's been angered and frustrated by de la Faye, the author of Van Gogh's early Catalogue Raisonné, who, from volume to volume, cannot seem to make up his mind about the work he numbers F6114. That's the one in the courtroom in Berlin in the 1930s. It's the representation of the tall, flame-like cypress tree. Is it the one hanging behind Otto Wacker in the courtroom? Or is it the original, the one touched by the hand of Van Gogh? No one knows. Certainly not de la Faye, anyway. He just keeps attributing the work and disattributing it. So, depending on which edition of his catalog you consult, F614 is either an authentic Van Gogh or a fake. The de Jong siblings are determined to get to the truth, and their quest is brilliantly documented in Me, My Brother, and My Father's Van Gogh by Riverain Productions Limited, which originally aired on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation television program Witness. First stop, the Canadian Conservation Institute in Ottawa, a world-class facility. Monica and Michael stand by nervously as Marie-Claude Corbeil, the CCI's senior conservation scientist, puts F614 through rigorous testing. She subjects the work to ultraviolet x-rays, paint analysis, and microscopy. Will Corbeil announce, yes, it's most definitely a Van Gogh? Most definitely not. That sort of epiphany never occurs in research labs, except maybe in the movies. There are many things a good scientist can tell you about a work of art, but one of them is not who made it. Science can bring data to support an attribution, not make an attribution. We'll discuss the role of laboratory testing later on. For now, suffice it to say that it's not good news for the sister and brother, even if Michael, who appears to be the more optimistic of the two, thinks he spotted a red curly hair under the microscope, which he feels could only be Van Gogh's. It would be nice if it were that easy. Undaunted, Monica and Michael carefully wrap the F614 painting for a transatlantic voyage. They're off to Amsterdam, and the world's foremost authority on Van Gogh, the experts of the Van Gogh Museum. The rigors of documentary filmmaking probably dictated that the de Jongs bring their painting first to the CCI for testing, then to the museum for the assessment of connoisseurs. That's the wrong way around. You should first take the work to relevant scholars, typically the most accessible and inexpensive step, especially since a digital photo might be enough for an initial look-see. If the connoisseur thinks the piece looks right, or if there's disagreement among the scholars, you take the work to a recognized lab for testing. The Van Gogh Museum's expert make a close study of F614, sometimes with the naked eye, at other times with sophisticated instrumentation. It's the x-ray that kills any vestige of hope that it's a genuine Van Gogh. It's clear to the museum's professionals that the buildup in paint layers is not right. Yes, the final impasto design is there, but the impression is shallow and results in empty mannerism. Someone here is trying very hard to make us believe that Van Gogh painted this work, but not quite succeeding. The experts tell the crestfallen de Jongs that it's a clever forgery, made by a talented forger. He or she knew exactly what the experts would be looking for and left a trail of so-called evidence throughout the work, but it's just too easy to be clear-cut. as your favorite TV detective might say when bad guys are trying to pass a murder off as a suicide. The clues are just too obvious. The irrepressible Michael DeJong, faced with the near absolute certainty that the painting is a fake, tries to sell it to the museum as an excellent example of a forgery, what you could call an attempt at making lemonade when life sticks you with lemon. Monica, however, seems far less certain that she wants to part with the work. In any case, there's one last straw to cling to. The next day, weather and her failing health permitting, art historian Annette Telligen-Hoogendoorn, one of the world's foremost experts on Van Gogh, and a woman who had known Monica and Michael's late father, will come to the museum to view F614. Telligen-Hoogendoorn, old and feeble, she passed away shortly after the filming, is wheeled into the museum room where F614 awaits on an easel. And here, the documentary treats us to a rare and ephemeral moment, a unique glimpse at the mystery of connoisseurship. From the point of view of the painting, we see the old woman rise with difficulty from her wheelchair and slowly approach the canvas. In a split second, her hopeful expression changes, almost imperceptibly. We see a mixture of sadness and pain. The great art critic, Bernard Berenson, once said that when faced with a forgery, he would sometimes be racked with stomach cramps. Whistler claimed to swoon in the presence of an authentic Velasquez. The look on Telligen-Hoogendoorn's face says it all. It's almost redundant when she turns and regretfully informs the DeJongs that the painting is a fake. F614 makes the long trip back to Winnipeg, and the story ends on a wistful note. Monica DeJong says, "This is the painting that reopened doors into the past, into the world of my father, and that's a lovely thing to get after your father has passed away." So the painting, almost certainly produced with criminal intent, has found a happy home. Well, that's it for this episode of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies. Please subscribe, and if you're a victim of art fraud, please write to me. My email is fakesandfrauds, all in one word, at writeme.com. In closing, please note that an illustrated print version of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies is available at Amazon worldwide in Kindle or paperback format. So this is your host, Mark Luke Carrier, saying bye-bye for now.